Well, right, excuse me. Sorry. Is that a considered a conservative metric for calculating flow rates?
is the most conservative method we have available to us. Our continuous simulation hydrologic models are more accurate, but they're less conservative. We typically will apply the rational method to be conservative.
And then last question for you is with regards to the time frame in which the spine road will be in that gravel state, do the Department of Ecology regulations allow for the discharge of sediment-laden water from areas of that nature?
No, the NPDES permit that this project will have will dictate that. No illicit discharges, which includes sediment-laden waters, are allowed to be discharged at any point.
No further questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Liao. Mr. Telgen, do you have additional cross?
Yeah. So designed to 100-year storm, that's a pretty standard thing, right?
It depends on where you're at. Most conveyances are actually designed to the 25-year. And then flow control is typically 50-year or sometimes 100-year.
Flow control. Isn't that CFS?
Detention, that's the metering of the discharge from the entire project.
And is that measured in CFS?
It is.
Okay. And in other, I guess, cases, I have seen when I've seen stormwater engineers provide reports for their stormwater systems, they'll often have a little chart, where it shows like, here's the CFS for a 5-year event, here's the CFS for a 10, 20, whatever the gradation is, on up to whatever the design event is. Did you do that here, where you calculated the CFS for anything other than 100-year storm?
Yes.
Did you submit it
Yes.
for the discharge from the energy dis from the discharge from the pipe coming into P2?
Believe those flow calculations are part of the current draft of the drainage report that we're editing based on comments.
Okay, so that's something that that's something that would not have been submitted yet.
Not yet.
Okay, not something for the examiner to review right now.
Correct.
Gosh. Sorry about that. Not something that's been submitted for anybody in this case to review.
Correct.
In your, Mr. Geach has asked you about whether the swale will be lined with vegetation. You said it will have grass, and that will help. Are you claiming credit for stormwater quality management through that?
No.
And why not?
One, we don't need it. And two, it's more conservative.
Okay. But you would agree with me at least you would agree with me at least that in your drainage plan, you don't describe that particular feature as being a stormwater quality management BMP.
That's correct.
Okay. No further questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Telegin. I will turn it back one more time to Mr. Getches and or Ms. Liao.
Could I just have like 1 or 2 minutes? I want to check one thing. I may have one more question unless Ms. Liao has. There's something I want to look up in the Kitsap County Code. Just one second.
I can ask my one question while he's doing that.
Okay.
Is that okay? just keep this attempt on time. And I apologize if I wasn't following that last line of questioning with regards to the chart that indicates the various storm events and the calculated flows. I don't know if that was specific to Wetland P2 or to the entire site. Was that which of the two was that being described for? Was it the entire site or just P2, Mr. Mooney? That was the question that I was posed to you, and I apologize for not tracking it.
The question I understood from Mr. Telegin just now was specific to
P2.
The South Gabion discharge.
Yeah. I believe Ms. Olson provided some testimony about the sizing of the Gabion. Do you recall, were you present for that?
I was.
All right. And so has at least Ms. Olson reviewed the sizing for that gabion, as far as you're aware?
I don't know what she's seen yet for the drainage part. I know there's been coordination because of the iteration process.
Okay. So there's
she's
at
aware
least
of that. She's aware of the design, but I don't recall that she's seen the documented calcs yet.
Got it. Okay. Sorry. Thanks for that clarification. That's it for me. Thank you.
Oh, Mr. Mooney, you mentioned the definition of pollution generating impervious surfaces. And did you say you got that from the stormwater manual?
Yes. I say that questioningly because I don't have it in front of me.
What about this in our Kitsap County code, where this is Kitsap County code 208-360. And then where it says at the bottom, the following are not considered regularly used surfaces and infrequently used maintenance access roads. Do you think that part, infrequently used maintenance access roads, would apply to the road to the right of Wetland P2?
Yes.
Okay.
In the middle it condition, yes.
I'm sorry, I cut you off there. In the what?
The middle condition that we've talked about, where there is not regular vehicles, people who live there driving it, or construction vehicles using it, then yes.
Right. Okay. Of the three different conditions, the middle one. Okay.
Yes.
Yep. Do I need to leave this up for anyone? This isn't one of the exhibits. It's just part of the Kitsap County code.
Mr. Telgen, did you have any other questions on this code?
If Mr. Geaches could just scroll down a bit. It looks like that ordinance was adopted in 2016. Do you know if this project is vested in the 2016 code?
Right. We'd have to go back and look at an older code, I think.
Right. And I also note that this particular section says such surfaces include. It doesn't look to be an exhaustive list, but I guess that's just me.
Still need this or?
No, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions of this witness?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Moody. Okay. I think that typically right now we'd need to do a quick break for the clerk. I also understand that we are finishing at 4 today. So before we do a quick break, I did want to touch base with Ms. Liao. According to my notes, it looks like, I just have a question here. Are you planning to call Mr. Heacock as a witness?
I'm planning to call him next, given that he's not.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, I heard loud and clear. So,
yeah. So then, Ms. Decker would go on Friday, and then we'd hear from, Mr. Telgen would have his rebuttal. Okay. Yeah. Are we understanding? Okay. So, how long do you need, Ms. Schlatter? Right. Do you need like 5 minutes for a quick break?
Yeah, 5 minutes is totally fine. More if you guys need it, but whatever works.
Okay, so we'll come back right around 3. And I also need to say I have a hard stop, so I can shift to another meeting at 4. So like 3:58. Okay,
perfect.
Thanks. See you.
Thank you.
Okay, we are back on the record here at 3 o'clock on Monday, December 4th, 2023. This is the matter of the appeal of the critical area buffer reduction, notice of administrative decision number 22-02629. We are proceeding with the applicant's next witness.
Yes, Mr. Steve Heacock, please.
All right, he's coming over now. All
It says you've been promoted.
you are promoted. I know we heard from you a couple of weeks ago, but I'm going to go ahead and swear you in again. Please raise your right hand. You swear or affirm the testimony you give today is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Heacock. Go ahead, Ms. Liao.
All right. Hello again, Mr. Heacock. I'm just trying to get all my exhibits up, trying to go as fast as I possible. So I know you've already stated your name for the record, so I'm going to just go on and ask you to remind us a few things about your position at the county. What is your position at the county?
I'm a senior planner with the county for Department of Community Development.
Okay. And how long have you been in that position?
Since March of 2007. So whatever that math is.
Yeah. Do you have any professional certifications or licenses?
I am a licensed geologist with the state.
Okay.
1799.
How long have you been a licensed geologist?
I think since 2002, I believe. There was a period where through your geologic experiences and things like that, when the licensure just started with the state, prior to that, there was no licensing ability, but the Department of Licensing created a geology licensure for geologists and hydrogeologists and also engineering geologists. So I am the geologist category.
Great. What are the scope of your responsibilities at the county in connection with this particular CABR decision?
Sure. Well, I was identified as the staff lead for creating the critical area buffer reduction report. So working with other staff members, assembling data, making sure I had all the, you know, right pieces of the puzzle to process the application. And so that would include SEPA review and you know, all those components too.
Okay. Generally speaking, how much of your role at the county includes reviewing wetland delineations and categorizing?
I would say most of the permits that I review, of the permits I review, there's probably associated wetlands or wetland reports in probably like 2/3 of them, just as a throw of a dart. But I do typically, you know, review more complex things. So it depends. If it's a SFR, you know, with the broad scope of SFR, and all of that, probably 2/3, I'd guess.
SFR meaning single family residential.
Yeah. Sorry. Right.
Yeah. No worries. Just guess at approximately how many wetland delineations and reports you've reviewed over the course of your tenure at the county.
It is hundreds and hundreds, would be my guess.
There.
Probably not 1,000, but yeah.
Fair. And in terms of applications for critical area buffer reductions, just general guess about how many applications you've reviewed over your time at the county?
Let's see, probably 200, 150, somewhere in there.
Great. And I believe, as you may have already just mentioned, that you, for purposes of this CABR, you performed SEPA review and you were lead staff on the staff report. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
Have you also been involved in review of the minor modification to the plat number 2, the ECG and the SDEP applications for that have been discussed in this hearing?
Yes.
Okay. And have you listened to the testimony of all the witnesses in this hearing?
For the most part.
Okay. I'll ask you more specifically if it becomes relevant. So that's fine. Yeah. Okay, very good. So I'm going to ask you about some testimony provided by your colleague, Jeff Smith. Uh-huh. He identified that you served as the SEPA lead on the minor modification number 2 to the Arborwood plat. Okay, great. So that's correct?
Mm-hmm.
And in your prior testimony from the first day of hearing, you said that you were familiar with the county's documentation of prior SEPA reviews for the Arborwood project. Is that correct?
Sure, absolutely.
All right. And I believe you previously referenced the 2009 MDNS issued for the Arborwood preliminary plat. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Right. I'm going to bring that up here on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And just ask you a couple of quick questions about that. So this is F6, and again, that 2009 MDNS. I'm just going to point your attention to this first long paragraph here that starts with description of current proposal. Just generally, what was the description of the proposal that was reviewed in this 2009 MDNS?
Well, you know, all the components of, you know, the number of residences, you know, there was to be a mix of single family homes and townhomes at the time, and a large retail space, you know, that type of thing. And of course, the dedicated greenway. And another component was, you know, the ability of the county to county parks to purchase a significant large piece of property to the west of here as well. So these were all pieces of the puzzle of the environmental impact statement. And then this, of course, this supplemental environmental impact statement, and it's the mitigated determination of non-significance also adopted that environmental impact statement review, where there were several alternatives that had also been proposed with the project. So that analysis, it was an adoption of that complete analysis.
Got it. And that EIS that had been adopted, was that for what's known as a non-project action, that earlier EIS?
It was a... the way EISs work is that there would be basically a summation of no action, you know, and then planned alternatives. And so they are considered non-actions, I guess, at that time. Yeah.
Non-project, meaning like planning documents as opposed to
specific
development proposals. Okay. Uh-huh. But this 2009 MDNS, do you know, based on your familiarity with the documents, was this considered a project level SEPA review at this
point? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Totally.
Yeah.
Great. Based on your review of the county SEPA documentation, is it your understanding that for purposes of SEPA review, proposed buffer modifications and wetland fill were evaluated in this 2009 MDNS?
I'm sorry, what was that again?
So my question to you is that based on your familiarity with this 2009 MDNS, strictly for purposes of SEPA review, is it your understanding that buffer modifications and wetland fill for Arborwood were evaluated as a part of this MDNS?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, trade-offs were made here and there. Additions to wetlands, and in fact, you know, the main subject here, I think, was also part of the mix. I don't know if you're getting to that point or not, but yeah,
we'll get there. So, okay, great, thank you. I actually want to shift to the development agreement that's referenced in that MDNS.
Sure.
Exhibit F8 here. Are you familiar with the development agreement for the
in a general way?
Okay. And would you agree with prior witness testimony that the Arborwood project is governed by the development agreement?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go to page 5, which I just want to and this is section 3.2, which starts with further project level SEPA review. Are you familiar with this section of the development agreement?
Yes.
Okay. Can you just briefly summarize what this section 3.2 said with regards to additional or to project level review or additional project level review for the Arborwood development?
Well, essentially, what this does is that it is the environmental review of the plat at a time and space, if you will. And that whole point would be that if the plat isn't principally changed for certain components that we're reviewing, that this document is the document that is processing it. And the way that plats work is that plats have vesting. And so it provides the vesting document and documentation in this particular case. So, you know, see here it references attachment D1, mm-hmm. and then further states about the build out of the project, mm-hmm. and, you know, phasing, et cetera, and so forth. Obviously, the phasing has changed, but the layout, the principal layout, has only been modified, you know, for more so for where the location of the residential units are. There's additional walls that are built, things like that, that we've processed through the minor plat amendments. And as to date, we have two minor plat amendments that we've reviewed, and Mr. Smith has been the lead on those. That's more of his specialty.
Right, right. So I'm just going to ask you a couple quick questions about this document, and then we'll actually go away.
Yeah.
So this sentence here, can you just read this real quick?
Sure. It says this project level SEPA compliance is intended to satisfy all SEPA requirements for the subsequent build out of the project through implementing approvals. Great. And it's further defined in section 4.
Great. And then this last sentence.
The SEPA process to be followed for implementing approvals is set forth in attachment C.
Great. Thank you. And I'm just going to take us real quick to attachment C.
Right.
And so can you just quickly refresh yourself with this step one and just summarize your understanding of this step one in the SEPA process for the implementing approvals for Arborwood?
Right.
Just skim it real quick and refresh yourself and let me know how you understand this step one, what this means.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And it's got the siting there, the WAC 197.11.600.4a. Right. Yep.
Right. Right. Yep. So yep. I think you were kind of describing this earlier, but this talks about first determining if it's within the project envelope. So is that original preliminary plat design that you described?
Yes.
Okay. And then this sentence here that starts, if so, is that what you're describing in terms of if there's no changes?
If no substantial changes.
Then the SEPA, existing SEPA documents analysis will be utilized. No further SEPA threshold determinations required.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Great. Perfect. So then you mentioned the minor modification number 2, which you were involved with. So let's go there. So is this, this is the decision. Does this look familiar to you for the minor mod number 2?
Yes. Yep.
I'm going to go to page 6 because my understanding is that you were the SEPA lead on this. Oh, great. And then,
That's right.
And my understanding is you issued a SEPA addendum for this minor modification. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct.
In general, what's the purpose of a SEPA addendum?
Well, when we have a modification to a proposal, and if there is a potential for a SEPA-related impact or something to change in relation to that review, then we issue what's called an addendum to that, to the previous determination. So in this case, we reference the mitigated determination of non-significance that we had before us and a bit before, from 2009. And what we do is uphold all of the elements of that previous mitigated determination of non-significance further, with the modification that's proposed. We describe the elements that are changing in that minor modification procedure. So we describe what the ask is, essentially, and then further lay out that it's not principally changing any of the elements, and that the mitigated determination of non-significance is still in place.
Great. I'm going to go to this next page here. And can you just read this highlighted paragraph here?
Sure. The addendum provides additional information about the minor plat amendment. The modification and the impacts of these modifications are within the range of the alternatives and environmental impacts previously analyzed in the July 23rd, 2009 MDNS, and additionally within the previous addendum issued November 19th, 2019. The addendum does not substantially change that analysis. And then I reference CWAC 197.11.600.
Right. And can I just ask you to quickly refresh yourself on this number one?
Okay.
And then when you do, my question for you is, does this this paragraph tell us that the addendum includes review of a revised wetland report, revisions to the spine road design, and revisions to the bridge stream crossings?
Yeah, that's right.
Very good. Okay. So having reviewed the having reviewed the 2009 MDNS, and based on what you described in this minor modification number two, make a conclusion with regards to whether the proposed activities for the CABR application that's under appeal are within the scope of the impacts of what the county reviewed in the 2009 MDNS?
Where are you pointing to?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not pointing anywhere. So I'm jumping a little bit. So, this is the minor modification to the plat itself. And okay. I'm extrapolating over to the CABR application. Okay. So my question to you is, did you, when you were reviewing the CABR application, did you similarly, like the same way you looked at the CEPA addendum for the minor modification, did you look at whether the CABR application, the activities described in that, fit within that scope of the 2009 MDNS?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, and did you conclude that it did?
Yes.
Okay, very good. I want to go back to the development agreement, actually right back to where we were. And
okay.
And I just want you to, I think you had commented on this reference to this WAC here. Can you just read this sentence? Oh, I can't highlight it, but it starts with under WAC 197. Can you just read that real quick?
That sentence, sure.
Yeah.
Under Washington Administrative Code 197-11-600, (4)(a), sub A, agencies acting on the same proposal for which an environmental document was prepared are not required to adopt the document. If the application is beyond the project envelope, then a threshold determination is required under step two below.
Okay. So going back to that WAC site, in your opinion, did the county need to adopt the 2009 MDNS when the county approved the CABR? Issued the CABR decision in order to comply with CEPA?
Probably not, because nothing really had principally changed in the CABR. We reference those previous documents as a matter of course.
Sure, sure. But at least in terms of what this WAC says, you're not required to actually adopt those. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's, great. That is correct.
Okay, great. So when Mr. Telegin asked you some questions on the first day of hearing about your discussion of SEPA in the CABR decision,
sure.
Do you recall that? Yeah. He specifically asked you about your discussions of buffer reductions being categorized as a variance.
Yeah.
And thus you concluded they were categorically exempt from SEPA review. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
So based on the discussion we just had about the minor modification and the SEPA addendum, and then, you know, the scope of impacts being proposed in the CABR decision being, you know, within the scope of impacts evaluated in the 2009 MD&S, was it necessary to also determine that the CABR was categorically exempt from SEPA, strictly speaking?
Well, reviewing this again, no, it was not necessary.
Got it. So you could have just relied on the 2009 MD&S and SEPA agenda. Yeah. And you wouldn't even need to have said that. Is that correct?
No, correct.
Okay, great. Very good. And then last, I think I asked you this before when you provided testimony, categorically exemptions under SEPA, those are not subject to administrative appeal before the county. Is that correct? Oh,
that's correct. Yes, an addendum. Yeah, that's right.
Great. Okay, perfect. Great. I want to ask you some questions. Let's stop sharing for a minute just so I don't distract you about the actual CABR review that you performed for the decision under appeal. So yeah. So let's see, we've heard testimony from Mr. Smith and Ms. Olson describing their participation in the CABR application.
Sure.
Would you agree that Mr. Smith participated in a portion of the review process, at least as it concerns land use permitting? Because I know those were the issues he said that he took.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And how would you characterize Ms. Olson's role?
Any kind of supplemental any kind of associated permit in the county where there's a potential review by stormwater would have a review component by stormwater. And so in the permit system itself, there's workflow steps. And so all of the workflow steps have a required review component. And so, you know, even public works and the public works trails group, there's all these subsets that are part of the review survey, land use, stormwater, traffic, you know, all these components are all reviewed as part of the document. And then they review the actual submitted documents by the applicant specific to their area of expertise.
Okay, great.
And then they provide conditions in their review component in the permit. And so if there are specific conditions that we need to add into the permit, that and in an administrative permit like this, we often will transmit all of those conditions into the main site development activity permit, so that they're transferred over as conditions of approval of the overarching larger permit.
Got it. Okay.
If that helps.
It does. And I believe we heard testimony from Ms. Olson that she provided that review and comment that you described.
Yep. Yes.
Was it the stormwater plans that were submitted as a part of the CABR?
Yep. That's right.
Okay, very good. So is it fair to say that you relied on her for purposes of review of the stormwater plans?
Oh, yeah, completely.
Okay, great. We've heard a lot of testimony in this hearing about the status of the stormwater plan that was submitted as a part of the CABR, which is Exhibit F-16.
Uh-huh.
When that was submitted as part of the CABR application, were you aware that the status of that plan is effectively not being final in terms of final approved form by the county?
Oh, well, typically in a review of an application of this type, we are subject to a 60% design window. Typically, there's conceptual, then 30%, 60%, 90, and then the final. So in this case, the requirement is a 60% submittal for the stormwater plans.
Okay, great. Did you hear Mr. Smith and Ms. Wilson's testimony about the permit review process for the SDAP and the ECG that began prior to the CABR application being reviewed?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Yeah, so I asked Mr. Smith and Ms. Wilson some questions about the sequencing of the CABR coming after the start of the submission of the SDAP and the ECG would you also agree that there was review of all three applications kind of happening concurrently at the county?
That was going on for sure.
And did you were you aware of the status of those reviews as you were reviewing the CABR application?
Maybe not exactly where they were in time and space, but certainly, you know, I was reviewing those, documents as well. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's see. I'm going to actually share screen again. This time I'm going to go to the, minor modification again. And I want to ask you about a couple conditions real quick, Mr. Smith testified to earlier. So previously, these are conditions of approval in the staff report for the minor amendment to the plat F26. Sure. Yeah, yep. And I'd asked Mr. Smith about these conditions. Did you hear that testimony?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and are you familiar with these conditions 25, 26, 27, and 28 related to critical areas? Okay, great.
Sure, sure.
And I'm going to focus in particular on 27, but would you agree that these conditions required Taylor Morrison to obtain a CABR approval for all buffer averaging reductions and wetland fill for?
Yes. Yeah. In this case, yeah, because there were changes and because we had consulted with management as well about this because it was a bit unusual. But that the phase 4-5 and component of 6 was multi-phased. And so it's pieces of the puzzle of three different phases that typically we do a review of a buffer reduction of this nature within a site development activity permit by itself. But because this had those three components sort of merged or melded into one, management advised us that this would probably be the best way to deal with this.
Got it.
So they suggested a critical area buffer reduction processing and administrative permit to deal with the overarching three-phase part of the project.
And that's for the buffer averaging, the reductions, and the wetland fill. Is that correct?
Okay. Correct.
Yep. Stop sharing just for a minute so I don't confuse, and then we'll go back to that, something else. So back to your review of the CABR application. Before approving the CABR that was applied for, did you become familiar with or review the Radicke 2007 wetland report?
I made myself familiar with the Radicke report.
Okay. And the 2018 supplemental memo that Radicke submitted as well.
Clearly we did review that because when the two companies came forth with the first minor plat modification, we had returned that permit for an updated wetland report. And so that's, I think, Colton was discussing that. Oh, they were asked to revise, you know, and make sure that nothing had changed. And that's standard practice for us.
Yeah. Okay, very good. All right, now I'm going to go back to share my screen. So this was just a demonstrative exhibit that we shared with Ms. Bartlett earlier today, and her testimony. Oh. There's so many reports that ELS had
submitted.
So I just wanted to ask you if you can just scan through the dates of these reports. Do you recall, at least up until this row seven, do you recall reviewing these reports prior to issuing the CABR decision in this appeal?
Yes.
So you reviewed each of these. And I don't know, do you recall, this hasn't been admitted, but do you recall if you reviewed an updated habitat management
plan? Yes, I do recall that. Yes.
You did. Okay, very good. Excellent. And with regards to the September 7th dated plan that Ms. Bartlett described to, she testified that she was reviewing additional activities in that report related to a sewer line corridor and early clearing and grade activities. Were you present for that, her testimony on that front?
Sure.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So do you remember if you reviewing those additional activities in the September 7th report before issuing the CABR decision?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Do you remember that reviewing her analysis of those additional areas of wetland buffer disturbance? Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, very good. I'd actually like to go to that CABR decision now. That's Exhibit F28.
Okay.
Look familiar to you?
The administrative notice. Uh-huh.
Right. Okay. And I'm going to go to the staff report.
There you go.
Very good. And so I'm going to go right to your recommendation, because I know there were some questions of you previously with regards to the scope of activities that were being approved in this CABR decision.
Uh-huh.
Can you just review this first sentence or this first clause under the recommendation, and maybe just go and read it out loud?
Okay. Yeah, based upon the analysis above and the decision criteria found in Kitsap County Code Title 19-100-135, Department of Community Development recommends that the critical area buffer reduction for Taylor Morrison Northwest, Arborwood North, Phase 4, 5, and 6 North, Spine Road A, and associated access bridges be approved subject to the following conditions.
Okay, very good. So from what you can recall, would the scope of activities that were being approved in this CABR decision include the fill of wetland Z3 in phase 4?
Well, it was definitely part of the phase 4, 5, 6 permit to fill. The documentation that we essentially need for that kind of fill would be a communication from the Army Corps of Engineers if a related fill permit was required. And the applicant did provide that in their submittal as part of the CABR itself. So that particular wetland fill, there's really no action. And I'll further explain that these smaller isolated wetlands are not regulated. In the 2007 iteration of the critical area ordinance, class 3 wetlands less than 2,500 square feet in size are not regulated. They're not regulated by Kitsap County DCD. And further, Category 4 wetlands up to 7,500 square feet in size are also not regulated. So we would just receive verification and a component mitigation plan. And within that mitigation plan, we'd identify an area, which in this case was to mitigate further by having additional buffer areas at Wetland O, well to the south. And so those are the bits and pieces that we had reviewed within that application.
Great, thank you. What about the bridge crossings for Spine Road A? Would those have been included in here as well?
So further on the bridge crossings, again, we pointed to the MDNS in relation to the location of the roadway. That, again, is part of the vesting of the project. Nothing really changed other than the requirement that there'd be a wildlife corridor beneath that crossing. And so I will take my hat off to Mr. Smith in relation to findings for this particular wildlife crossing, because Kitsap County Public Works, because these are going to be finaled as county roads, the county requirement for public works is that those roads meet WASDOT standards. And so Mr. Smith went to and did a lot of digging and discovery and found two individuals that were absolutely phenomenal resources for us to determine whether or not the design itself was going to meet the wildlife crossing requirement. And so one of the delays in getting this permit out was getting that information. And then from there, we had provided the specifications from the WASDOT specialists, Mr. Smith had, and via email, then we had provided that to the applicant to just make sure that we had this component of what was required in the EIS review by the by state fish and wildlife biologist Steve Kalinowski in that original analysis. So so that those bits of the puzzle, if you will, we felt were absolutely essential to provide in this document.
Right. So that was approved as a part of this then.
Yes.
Okay, great.
That's right. Yeah.
And then of course all those buffer reductions we've been talking about with respect to Spine Road A adjacent to those. Okay. The sewer lines in phase six that we talked about earlier, those would have been included as well.
Yeah.
Temporary erosion sediment control ponds that Ms. Bartlett analyzed in her report as well. And then finally, temporary impacts to buffers. Those were also considered in that in this approval.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mr. Tullegen previously asked you about temporary impacts to buffers and whether those are allowed under the code. If a development such as Arborwood demonstrates that temporary impacts to buffers are necessary but can be appropriately mitigated using mitigation sequencing, which is what Ms. Bartlett described earlier today, is that allowed under the vested critical area ordinance as far as? All right. I would like to shift gears a little bit, sharing my screen. Want to ask you about the Spine Road, and in particular, potential relocation of that Spine Road. I believe Mr. Tullegen previously asked you about this document.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So I just wanted to ask. Yeah. So let me.
It
just
was relatively new. You know, I had looked at it. I didn't at that time have a chance to really, you know, flesh out that review. So, so I don't know if I correctly answered his question about it.
Well, let me just remind you. So this was attached to the declaration of one of the Corps engineers, Mr. Chambray, and it hasn't been formally submitted to the county. He included it as a declaration for purposes of describing that the Spine Road could be shifted. I know you haven't reviewed it yet, but have you now seen this document?
I have seen it. Yes.
Okay. Understanding that it hasn't been formally submitted to you, based on the limited look that you've had at this, do you have any concerns about what this is showing in terms of shifting the Spine Road over by a few feet to comply with a 100-foot buffer condition?
I don't have any concern with that.
Okay. And when you approved the CABR decision, did you understand that the county had not started, much less finished, the permit review and approvals for the final configuration of this road?
That's correct.
Okay. So in your opinion, is it still timely for the county to review this slight modification of the Spine Road before issuance of the SDAP?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you. Great. I'm going to ask you a few questions, shift gears again. I want to ask you some questions about wetland P2. Wetland consultants from Radke in this proceeding testified that the county requires updates to wetland delineations every few years. Is this correct?
Yeah, every 5 years.
And why is that?
Well, wetland conditions can change over time. Again, wetland review is, as Dr. Cook had stated, is a snapshot in time. And again, it is part of the wetland review procedure through Department of Ecology's guidance as well, that we would review in a timely manner for if something is still a concept, and then later reviewed, that we need those supplemental reviews.
Okay. Do you recall suggesting to Ms. Bartlett that she might consider reevaluating the categorization of wetland P2?
Well, I've been out to the project several times now with agency staff. My first visit out there was with Allison O'Sullivan. Excuse me, just for a second. Sorry, I've got a horrible, cold. I have bronchitis. And so I'm suffering with that. So my apologies. So we went out several times throughout this iteration with agency staff. And then further, when the phase one occurred, we went out again. And in 2022, we went out there with Jill Burkar and the group, looking at wetland changes or considering wetlands in the vicinity, just to make sure that things, you know, hadn't principally changed and things like that. So I have been out there several times, and one of the last time I went out there and looked at the location of the the North Stream crossing, with Mr. Smith and also with Mr. Clark, I had looked at this area, this one certain elevation throughout the site that specifically looked like an old railroad grade to me. And so in talking to Joanne Bartlett later about coming back from that, because we wanted to make sure we had the wildlife crossing thing figured out. This was a visit in relation to wildlife crossing. And so it was kind of mid-review, I guess, for the caber. But we wanted all the elements of the caber to be locked in to creating the conditions, the required conditions, inspections, etc. And in so discussing that, we found that this old railroad grade, because this site at the turn of the 20th century, or maybe even before, was logged by rail logging. And so the impacts to rail logging can be rather significant. And so we wanted to make sure that that where this crossing was located was going to be a good spot for a wildlife crossing as well, because it was opposite with the roadway. So and I forgot why I'm going there with that. Anyway, it's just an interesting fact of this property is that there are turn of the century impacts, including wetland Q2, that we later identified that was created, what they were man-created situations here, including probably wetland Q1 also.
Okay. Sorry, I took you down a very interesting...
So my suggestion at that time was, after I looked at the rest of the application materials and saw that there was this roadbed that was talked about, I had suggested, because topographically it absolutely matches where this old railroad grade is, I suggested to Joanne Bartlett in a conversation that I felt that was a separation. And you can also see a topographic difference. I'll go to your scale. Here's wetland P2, and L2 is down below here, and the grade is in between, and the culvert could have been installed through the cut that was created with the cut that was created with the actual creation of the grade itself, because when they created those railroad grades, they would just side cast the material and stack up, could have created the backwatering for wetland P2, but it also could have created a situation where when they logged later, in later logging, probably 60, 70, maybe 90 years later, those areas, they wanted to get the water, out of that wetland. And through forest practices, they could have installed culverts to drain those particular features. And then they would have just put that water through the berm to drain that, so that they could access the surrounding area for eventual logging under State Department of Natural Resources guidance, which is way different than county guidance. So anyway.
Okay, great.
That helps.
Okay, so that was sort of the genesis of your suggestion that she reevaluate wetland P2.
Yes.
Okay, yes. That's very interesting. Thank you. Yep. Have you had a chance to review Ms. Bartlett's memorandum created after this appeal was filed concerning?
I have reviewed it. Yes.
Okay, and concerning the wetland P2 classification.
Yeah.
Have you had opportunity to form any opinions regarding her conclusions in that memorandum? Well,
it actually substantiates what I had originally thought all along. After reviewing all the materials, the 2007 report, I felt that OPG's practice at the time was to be more conservative about wetlands and buffers as part of the original environmental impact statement. Intrusion for the roadway had been part of that review, and elements of that they've already figured out where the mitigation was going to occur for that impact. That hasn't changed. So that piece of the puzzle, if you will, I felt it's best to have an accurate representation of wetlands, no matter. If we get additional buffering and things like that, well, maybe that's just as well, and all the better, the way I see it.
Yeah. So if this CAPR decision was remanded by the hearing examiner concerning this wetland P2, and as a part of the, or alternatively, if Taylor Morrison decided to modify or amend their existing CAPR approval, they presented you this information regarding wetland P2.
Yeah.
And if you were to formally agree that it was a category 4 wetland with a 50 foot buffer, as Ms. Bartlett has concluded in her memo, would there need to be a critical area buffer reduction to install the spine road 100 feet or even 85 feet away if there's a 50 foot buffer?
Well, for this component, if this is the only component that is contended, then I don't feel that a rewrite would be necessary. I personally, I don't feel, I think we can revise conditions in a permit. We could reissue the permit with an addendum report, or something of that nature. I think the remainder of the project and the elements within the remainder of the project have all of the right elements within the intent of what we were looking at for the caver.
Thank you. I'm going to shift gears and ask you a couple of questions about Wetland 302 Q1 and Q2, which you're clearly familiar with. In both the ELS's reports submitted for the phase 6 work, those were dated April 2022 and September 22, Ms. Bartley concluded these areas no longer meet the criteria for regulation of wetlands. Did you review and accept her conclusions that Q1, Q2, and 302 no longer exist?
Yeah, I did.
And do you recall that previously Wetland 302, Q1, and Q2 had been rated as Category 3 wetlands that are under 2,500 square feet?
Yes.
So as you described earlier, you know, I think you described it as they're not being regulated, but it's really more that you just need to mitigate for any fill of wetlands of that category size. And
that's correct.
Okay, yes. Great. So again, if this CABR decision was remanded by the hearing examiner for direction for reevaluation of those wetlands, would you agree that it's possible that the applicant could also just, instead of debating whether or not these are wetlands, just propose mitigation and fill them as would otherwise be planned?
Absolutely. But okay. If they're not wetlands, they would not be required to go through the fill iteration and mitigation as well. Now, if they propose that, then that would be beneficial. And if they have room to do so, I'd definitely be in support of that. You know, if we can get more mitigation out of a particular project and there's room for that to happen, then that's a benefit, definitely.
Sure. Okay. Last question for you. There's been some testimony with regards to the buffer restoration plan and a prescription in the mitigation plan proposed by Ms. Bartlett that the invasive species control should not exceed 10% coverage by invasive species. In your opinion, as a senior environmental planner for the county, is this standard acceptable to demonstrate compliance with the vested critical areas ordinance? Oh, you're on mute.
Sorry. Someone came to the door and I had dogs barking. I'm sorry.
Oh, did you hear my question? Do I need to repeat?
Yes, I heard your question.
Okay.
In relation to the monitoring and mitigation plans, from everything that I've ever reviewed and then later field reviewed by ELS and their assigns, that they've done an excellent job of weed management, of plant reinstallations. And I'll further add that a monitoring and mitigation bond is required, and that the applicant does not get this bond back until there's a satisfactory final report. And after the final report is issued, then we then review and approve the final mitigation. Then that's after a 5-year period of review. So we review for year 1, 2, 3, and 5. In the monitoring protocol. And so each one of those pieces of the puzzle for where the mitigation is going to occur, which would include the temporary impact areas as well, I'll state. So all of those areas would be required to be replanted if a performance bond may be required in addition to that if their full phase isn't proposed as well. So in the case of 4, 5, 6, we would require a performance bond, and then later that could be either transferred or or further defined in a monitoring and maintenance agreement and a monitoring and maintenance bond.
Okay, very good. That is my last question, but
okay. Very good.
I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Heacock. Before the clock strikes four, I'm going to ask Mr. Getches if he has any questions. And then since we're going again on Friday, I want to touch base with the parties as to time, start, finish, all that.
Yeah, and I'll relay if
you have to be available for cross.
I will be available on Friday. I've got this bronchitis. I had a out of town conference that I've missed now because of appeal hearings. Yeah. This is number three. So, but due to bronchitis, I've already made that decision to be available.
Great.
On Friday.
Awesome.
And no, I don't have questions for this witness.
Okay. Well, thank you. It's been determined that we will continue on Friday. And what's that date? The 8th?
The 8th, right.
Friday the 8th. What time are we going to stick with 8:30 a.m.? Is there an earlier? I mean, you do 8, but I don't know about the clerk.
Who does the applicant? Well, I guess the couple questions. Who does the applicant have left to call? Is it just Miss? Was it Decker?
I believe so. I hope that's the only person I have left to call.
And then I guess I'm wondering if the county's going to be calling back people before my folks go.
Yeah.
I may or may not.
Okay.
I mean, we've gotten a lot of the information out already.
Right. I guess I'll be driving from a much longer distance to my office on Friday. 8:30 is a tad early for that. Okay. I prefer 9, but if it's
excuse me.
If it's too bad, then I could do 8:30, I suppose. But I'd prefer 9 a.m.
Well, 9 works for me. The first 2 days of hearing we went until 6. Should we plan on 9 to 6? Does that work?
I could go later that day, definitely.
Well, I would request that we end it by 3. We have our firm holiday party right here on Friday, which we'll be rolling out to. But if we can have like a half hour transition period, we would liberate.
Okay. So 9 to 5:30 on Friday.
That seems fine.
Okay. And so, Mr. Heacock, you'll be up for cross-examination, and then Ms. Liao has a rebuttal witness, and then we will get to Mr. Telegin and Mr. Getches.
Sounds good.
Sounds great.
All right. Good. Thank you, everybody, for your time today. Anything else that we need to address before we close the recording?
I don't think so.
All right. Thanks again. See you all Friday.
Good job, Caitlin.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good job. All right.